This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The fundamental problem is that food is too expensive. Most of our people cannot afford to access nutritious food. And the root cause of that really is a lack of government intervention.
That's Alan Browdy, who heads Southern Africa Harvest, a non-profit group feeding people across the region. Details coming up. Also, the U.S. Justice Department says a computer hacking group aimed to declare cyber war on the United States. And Mozambique police fire tear gas at protesters in the capital Maputo this morning. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. There have been protests today in Mozambique's capital, Maputo. Police fired tear gas to disperse people who gathered at the scene where two opposition party figures were shot dead on Saturday after a disputed election. Several hundred people took part in the protest, with some burning red Frelimo flags in the street and throwing rocks. On the phone from Maputo, we have Amancio Vilancoles of VOA's Portuguese to Africa service. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Amancio.
Thank you, Ehe.
So, Amancio, please brief us on what you are witnessing in Maputo so far.
Well, what was supposed to be a peaceful protest this morning ended up being a very violent one. Venancio Mondlane, who is running for the presidential elections here in Mozambique, after the initial results were announced last week, he called for a peaceful protest to contest the result of these elections because he believes the elections were rigged in favor of Frelimo, the party that has been ruling Mozambique since its independence in 1975. So this morning we saw initial groups or small groups of people coming together at the place where last week two prominent politicians were murdered by unknown people. And then it turned to be hundreds of them coming to protest. And then when they were singing, when they were chatting, when they were showing their posters protesting the elections and also saying that Mozambique is ours, so we all need electoral justice. And then we saw police coming on and firing tear gas and also paper to disperse the protesters. So they ran away, and in that process, at least two journalists were injured, and also it said that at least six people were detained by the police following this manifestation.
And as you just mentioned, Amancio, the opposition candidates are saying the poll was rigged. The full results of Mozambique's October 9th national election are expected this week, with early results showing that the ruling party Frelimo is set for another win. So are there concerns that the unrest should spread or could spread?
It's not yet very clear because, as you can recall, this unrest was to happen in all the 10 provinces, but only in Maputo it was strong enough to have the police being this violent. In other provinces, police totally blocked the protesters to go into the street, affecting many businesses. Only in Maputo, protests were big. So it's not very clear whether tomorrow or after tomorrow this will continue or not. But knowing that, Mr. Venancio Mondlane today, when we spoke to him, he spoke to journalists when he came to tell his followers that they have to go home because the protest was over. He told the people, he told the press that there will be a follow-up action. He did not set up when this action will take place, but he made sure that the next step will be a bit radical compared to this one.
And that is independent to the presidential candidate, Venancio Mondlane, who said that?
Yeah, he said that there will be a follow-up process in the coming days. He did not say exactly when. We know that on the 24th this week, the electoral authority has to announce the results. So perhaps after that is when he will also start the formal protest, and he says he will not give up because he believes elections were rigged.
Amancio Vilanculés of VOA's Portuguese to Africa service in Maputo. Thank you for your input, Amancio.
Thank you. He'll see you next time.
The World Food Programme says almost 30 million people in Southern Africa are affected by the region's worst hunger crisis in decades. The United Nations agency blames a drought that's caused extensive crop failures. But as Darren Taylor reports, other experts say there are additional factors involved.
Five countries, Lesotho, Malawi, Namibia, Zambia and Zimbabwe, have declared national disasters over the drought and hunger. Angola, Eswatini, Mozambique and South Africa are also severely affected. World Food Programme spokesperson Thompson Piri says millions of people in Southern Africa risk going hungry.
The United Nations World Food Programme is calling for urgent assistance to prevent a widespread drought triggered by the El Nino phenomenon from deepening into a full-scale humanitarian catastrophe. A historic drought, the worst food crisis yet, has devastated more than 27 million lives across the region. Some 21 million children in Southern Africa are malnourished.
Piri says the agency needs around $370 million to provide immediate help, but it's only received a fifth of that as humanitarian crises rage in other parts of the world, including the Democratic Republic of Congo, Gaza, Sudan, and Ukraine. Agricultural experts tell VOA even if good rains fall the rest of October and into November, crops will only be ready next March and April. Piri says millions of children in Southern Africa are now lucky to get one meal a day. Alan Browdy heads Southern Africa Harvest, a non-profit group feeding people across the region.
The fact that so many of our children suffer this fate is really a crime against humanity as far as I'm concerned.
Despite the drought, he describes the current hunger and malnutrition as a man-made disaster.
The fundamental problem is that food is too expensive. Most of our people cannot afford to access nutritious food. And the root cause of that really is a lack of government intervention. They extricate themselves from any involvement in the food ecosystem. They let the market rule completely. Now, in a developing country, when you let the food market, the food ecosystem, rule completely, the powerful get more powerful and the weaker get weaker. And we saw the pictures of poor farmers.
Browdy acknowledges the drought's decimating crops, but he adds it's often not the dry conditions that destroy small farmers and their ability to produce food. Often, he says, it's the power of big retailers who control supply chains that favor large-scale farmers.
Now, the retailers are in business. They're interested in profit, and one can't blame them for that. That's the system. But one has to control that. One has to have price controls and other measures that ensure that the small farmer is empowered and that people are able to buy food that is affordable and nutritious food.
Browdy is one of many experts calling on regional leaders to work toward a pact that controls the prices of some protein-rich foods, including frozen chicken, eggs, beans, and peanut butter. In the absence of controls, say economists, food prices have risen sharply in many areas affected by the drought, increasing suffering. Authorities in Namibia and Zimbabwe are even killing wildlife, including elephants, to provide meat for hungry people. Many scientists say sub-Saharan Africa is one of the most vulnerable parts of the world to climate change because it depends on rain-fed agriculture. Millions of African livelihoods depend on the climate, with poor countries unable to finance resilience measures. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Two Sudanese citizens are facing charges for allegedly running a guerrilla computer hacking group called Anonymous Sudan. The Justice Department says the group aimed to declare cyber war on the United States by targeting the FBI, government agencies in Alabama, Microsoft, and X through a series of attacks. The group carried out more than 35,000 attacks, with 70 of them targeting the Los Angeles metro area, resulting in more than $10 million in damage in the U.S., as reported last week by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Central District of California. Ahmed Salah Yusuf Omar and Ala Salah Yusuf Omar have been charged with conspiracy and computer damage for their coordinated cyber attacks in 2023 through 24. For more perspective, VOA's Paul Ndiho spoke with Jimmy Kinyoni Bagonza, a data scientist and cybersecurity analyst.
From the IT security perspective, I would say there's no secure system on the planet. It's all about takes time and the motivation for someone to do so. So like you've talked about the Anonymous Sudan, the brothers who are arrested in Sudan for having caused mayhem within the U.S. government. And even there's some hospital in, I think it's in California, where they affected the services and a lot of people died because of not getting the emergency services. Back in Africa, for example, that is becoming more of a safe haven for hackers is because of the economic pressure on the youth. You will note that in Africa has the highest percentage of people under the age of around 30 in the youthful stages. And looking at it vis-a-vis the level of unemployment, which is also very high, this alone puts them into a situation of engaging in hacking activities. The motivation, because first of all, is the entry point into the hacking field or this cybercrime field is very, very low, the cost, if I may say, because online, all these tools are available online. You can get them online, you can learn the basics of cybersecurity online and being able to exploit them.
Does it take special skills for you to be so good at this that you are able to break into a system?
It takes time to cultivate the expertise to do that. So these tools are available online, yes, but you have to learn how to use them. And there are many resources online, like I've said, YouTube, TikTok, and so on. But then also more the, those that are more sophisticated, where now people have to get them on the underworld world, the cyber underworld world, where you have to access through special, specialized tools to access the underworld. People who trade in cyber tools. The Anonymous Sudan, they had also put their tool before they were arrested. It was also on the market underworld. And you find that on average, you'd say that buying a tool that will give you full access to a system or network, it is approximately around $300 in the cyber underworld world. So look at $300 vis-a-vis what you're going to reap out of it. So that is also another motivation. That's, like I said, the entry point into the cyber world.
What does it mean for somebody to hack into a system and, you know, take people's data? You are a cybersecurity analyst. This is your space. What does it take to do that?
From layman's understanding, hacking into something more or less like someone entering into a house that is locked. For the motivation, they vary depending on what they want. Some of them are more financial, others are more of espionage motivated. For example, some of the groups are being hired, more like mercenaries for hire to do a certain activity by government or state agents to achieve their political agenda. Others are financial agenda.
That was Jimmy Kinyoni-Bagonza, a data scientist and cybersecurity analyst, who spoke with VOA's Paul Ndiho. Kenya's ousted Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua on Sunday lashed out at his boss William Ruto as vicious and cruel, warning that his life could be in danger. Gachagua was impeached by the Senate on 5 out of 11 charges leveled against him on Thursday, but a court order put his replacement process on hold. The French news agency AFP reports that he said his security had been withdrawn and his entire staff sent on compulsory leave. He was speaking after being discharged from a hospital in the Nairobi suburb of Karan, where he was being treated for severe chest pains. Gachagua fell ill on Thursday afternoon, barely an hour before he was due to testify in an unprecedented two-day impeachment trial. The Senate voted on his removal from office after his lawyers unsuccessfully tried to postpone the session. He was found guilty on charges including threatening judges and using ethnically divisive politics, but cleared of corruption and money laundering. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. People in all 50 states will vote in this year's U.S. presidential election, but its outcome from 7 so-called swing states that will likely determine the winner. The southwestern state of Arizona traditionally favored Republican candidates, but Democrat Joe Biden won the state in 2020, and its electoral votes are up for grabs again in 2024. From Arizona, VOA's Dora Mahakwar has our story.
Arizona, home to more than 7 million people, historically leans towards Republicans. Over the past 76 years, only 3 Democratic presidential candidates have won the southwestern state. Joe Biden pulled off a narrow victory in 2020, and this election year, the race is tight again. Tom Riley is a professor and expert on democracy and citizenship at Arizona State University.
I think kind of underscores kind of this independent nature of Arizona. You know, we've kind of, it's a strongly unaffiliated, but also kind of libertarian.
Libertarians believe that liberty is the most important political value and that it can be achieved by limiting government power. Riley says that makes this group of voters hard to read.
Predicting their vote becomes very challenging because how they vote in one election doesn't necessarily mean they're going to vote in the next election. And they're notoriously ticket splitters, right? So they vote differently.
The electorate in Arizona is changing, including a growing Hispanic population that is increasingly coming of age to vote. Here's Riley again.
For this election, those Gen Z voters, those under the age of 30, are now mirroring the population in general of Arizona, and that's occurring for the first time. And so there is definitely a trend among older Latino voters, perhaps, of not being distinctly or primarily Democrat. Younger voters tend to be.
The other major change in voting patterns is the large number of people, particularly from California, who are moving to Arizona. Riley says the newcomers are changing how Arizona votes.
They tend to be a more Democratic or liberal vote that has kind of come in and permeate some of our, particularly our larger metropolitan areas.
Maricopa County is home to the state capital of Phoenix and has more than half of Arizona's total population. Whoever wins Maricopa usually wins the state. Ken Miller is an assistant professor of political science at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
It's that process where we have these big cities that are now coming to dominate state-level politics.
Riley says the issues that Arizonans care most about are the economy, reproductive rights, and immigration. Two of those issues are on the November ballot, including Proposition 139, which would codify a woman's right to abortion in Arizona and could drive more people to the polls. Jennifer Pyatt is with the Center for Public Health Law and Policy at Arizona State University.
It could have a pretty significant impact. So in terms of states where we've seen this happen in the past, we have seen a bump in voters showing up.
Proposition 314 would make illegally crossing the Arizona-Mexico border a state crime, in addition to a federal crime. One issue could drive more liberal voters to the polls, while the other could energize more conservative voters, says Riley.
We might see some split ticking there, right, that they maybe feel strongly on immigration and the border issue and would vote for one candidate there, but also feel strongly about reproductive rights and vote differently there.
Which means some Arizonans could vote to protect abortion rights, then split on voting for either former President Donald Trump or for Vice President Kamala Harris. Dora McQuarr, VOA News, Phoenix, Arizona.
On November 1st, tune in to VOA Africa for comprehensive coverage of the U.S. presidential election. Our team of reporters will be live from polling stations across the country, bringing you the latest updates and real-time results. Stay informed with VOA Africa, your trusted source for election news.
Kenya is one of 16 African countries that have organized female gamers competitions this month. Kenya's competition attracted at least 10 female gamers competing for a chance to represent the nation in the Democratic Republic of Congo next month. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
This year's female gaming competition in Kenya attracted 10 gamers compared to last year, where only one female was invited to compete. After more than 4 hours of tough competition, Kenya produced a winner who will represent the country in the Congolese capital, Kinshasa, where seven other national champions from seven African countries will compete against each other. Magdalene Mumbi, also known as Bambina in esports, has been playing the game since 2018 and was a favourite to win the competition. The players were playing a fighting game known as Tekken 8, where the players' attacking and defensive skills are tested.
I lost the very first game that I played, and I'm very excited. I made a comeback and won all my games throughout and also won the final game, the deciding match.
The competition aims to encourage more women to join the gaming industry, create diversity and fight toxic behavior that some in the community express against women. Derek Nyasio is tournament administrator of Swahili Esports Champions.
It's a great step forward, especially considering the local scene has been seeing, you know, like a male-dominant section within esports. So that's for FIFA, that's for Tekken as well, and the fighting game community in general. So being able to have these opportunities where also ladies can have an opportunity to showcase their talent, to shine, to get a chance to also travel outside and represent the country, it boosts the self-esteem and the confidence to also show up for other events.
Douglas Ogeto is a business director for Africa Esports Championship.
There's a lot of women game out there, but because, you know, their parents might not approve of gaming, not many young women are coming out. So this is just one platform where which women can actually come to showcase their skills, of course get to travel, get to be exposed, and, you know, who knows, maybe also get to build a career out of it.
According to the news.
That was our reporter, Mohamed Yusuf, reporting. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Tien Wong, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.